Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
And now, back to a man who didn't let being named one of the 100 most important radio talk show hosts in America go to his head.
Woo! Woo! Yes! In your face!
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for hanging around with me today as we continue to celebrate our 9th anniversary of being on the air. And we thank you for your attention. And we especially want to thank our guest this half hour, Mr. Austin Kiplinger, for all the times that he's been with us now. We're, I think this is maybe at least the 8th year, maybe the 9th. I think he's already been on the air on our show probably about 8 years. I think the first time was in 98. And he is, as you know, ladies and gentlemen, the patriarch of the Kiplinger Editors, an organization that I tell you about every week. And he is the son of the founder of the Kiplinger Editors. And he recently celebrated a birthday, and he's going to talk to us. He and his organization recently celebrated a birthday. Mr. Austin Kiplinger, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much, Jim.
It's good to have you here.
It's always good to be here, and you do a marvelous job. So let's be thankful for that.
Absolutely. I appreciate that. And a couple of quick things. Now, you had a birthday in August.
Right? September, yeah.
September, that's right. You and the company have birthdays in September. Your birthday is in September, and tell us the anniversary.
Well, actually, for our magazine, we're coming up on 60 years, and for our letter, of course, we have already passed 80. So
it's 83.
We can pick
83,
any date we like and celebrate.
I think the letter is 83 years old, and
that's exactly right.
And your own birthday.
Well, my own is 88, so I was here at the I was here at the beginning.
Well, you were a little ankle biter back then, weren't you, Mr. Kipling?
Well, I kind of grew up in my father's office, and
right.
I almost remember every nook and cranny of it.
Do you remember the as a young, you know, as a 7, 8, 9, 10 year old, and as a young teenager, do you remember the challenges he went through as a budding small business owner?
Oh, very much so. As I said, I was there almost all the time, and he started. He started 2-3 years before the letter,
mm-hmm.
Being a Washington information source for businesses.
Right.
Most of them, of course, small businesses. But people would call him or write him and ask him for specific information, and he would dig it out and get it to them. So then he started the letter as an outgrowth of that.
Mm-hmm. And, now, do you think he ever envisioned in the early days? Did he ever talk to you about in the 20s as the letter started getting a little popularity? Do you think he ever realized that he was maybe onto something?
I think he did know it, but it was not an instant success. It was a success editorially, but it took a long time to build, and he put a lot of his own efforts into it. It's, I guess we call it sweat equity now,
right.
Don't we?
That's right. Uh-huh.
And
absolutely.
He did all kinds of jobs for other publications, and he was a correspondent for the New York Times business page, and he worked for a magazine called World's Work.
Huh.
And a number of magazines on the side in order to feed this new project of his. These things don't just spring like right out of the head of Zeus. They take a lot of labor, and I take my hat off to anybody who's built a company from a small source, a small beginning, into a successful long range. Every big business starts as a small business.
Mm-hmm. That's the truth. Well, how long do you think it took him? How many years do you think it was before he said, you know what, I think we're going to make it?
Well, I think he always knew he was going to make it because he was determined he would.
He would make it, huh?
But he didn't know how long it would take to build its own momentum.
Right.
And I think it was the advent of the Depression and the New Deal and all of the radical changes that came in the 1930s that focused attention on Washington.
People needed to know, didn't they?
They had to know. Their survival depended on it.
Well, you know, I remember David Brinkley's book. I'm trying to think of the title. He talked about Washington prior to World War, prior to the Depression. He said Washington was a sleepy little Southern town.
And well, that's the old the adage is that it was a sleepy little Southern town, but of course it was still the nation's capital.
Right.
And the reason that it wasn't as dominant as it is today is that people didn't want it to be.
Right. Right.
And the whole aspect of government changed in that period of the 30s when it looked as though our survival depended upon some kind of central action. But you have to remember historically, government never cured the Depression.
Mm-hmm.
For all of the social programs and legislation and new social
right.
changes that came in, the Depression lasted until the war broke out and we transformed ourselves into a defense industry.
Right.
And then we came out of it with all feet running.
Absolutely. Mr. Kiplinger, stand by. Quick break, folks. 20 till. Don't go away. We got Mr. Austin Kiplinger right here on the Small Business Advocate Show. We're back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this is always a red letter day for me, ladies and gentlemen. When I get to interview Mr. Austin Kiplinger, I put being able to talk to Mr. Kiplinger right up there with on the top of my list. And Mr. Kiplinger, welcome back. And
thank you, Jim.
I think I mentioned a book that is one of my favorites. It's called Witness to a Century
yes.
by George Seldes. And I know I mentioned this probably whenever you're on the show, but I never think about you without thinking about the title of that book, Witness to a Century. George Seldes is a great book, and you probably remember George Seldes. He was quite a bit older than you, but he was one of the early investigative reporters right after the Muckrakers. And he talks about himself as a witness to a century, and I think of you that way.
Which century was he talking about, Jim?
I'm pretty sure he was talking about the 20th century.
I have to remind myself that the 20th century was the last century.
Exactly. Now, I tell people we're not in Kansas anymore, Toto. We're in the 21st century.
That's right.
You're exactly right. What do you make of all of the politics that's going on right now? It's an easy thing for most of us to say, well, it's just about as bad as it can get. But is it?
Let me tell you, Jim, I have a slightly different slant on the political scene from almost everyone else's. We talk about sharp divisions and how the country is more divided than it ever has been, and I don't believe it. I've been through the early days of isolationism before World War II.
Right.
I went through the Joseph McCarthy days in post-war. I went through the Vietnam era. I went through the Nixon era, and this country is not as divided as it was in those days.
Hmm.
Now, this is not obvious, because when the elections are so paper thin that you can almost not see the difference, I say we're coming closer together.
Hmm.
I think we're building a very large, moderate middle ground.
Yeah.
On both sides. I think the Democratic Party is trying to move back toward the middle, and I think you will see Nancy Pelosi, the new speaker, trying to do that. Despite her reputation, she comes from an old political family in Baltimore, Maryland.
Hmm.
Her father was the mayor down here. He was an old Paul.
Right.
He was kind of a Boston-type Paul.
Right.
And she knows practical politics.
Mm-hmm.
Now, over on the Republican side, you've got a lot of people who have broken from the hard line, as you well know,
mm-hmm.
and they're trying to move back toward the middle. And I think you're going to get more action out of this Congress over the next 2 years than most people believe. I don't think it's going to be gridlock.
Hmm.
It's not going to be sweetness and light. There's going to be plenty of pot-shotting at each other.
Right.
But I think in the last analysis, they're going to want to have something accomplished, because they've got to go before the country 2 years from now on a national election. And neither one of them wants to look like they have egg on their face.
Right.
So I don't know whether that's a more auspicious outlook or not, but I think practically speaking, that's going to be the result. You're going to get some moderate compromise legislation on a lot of things. It's not going to satisfy either side. And maybe that's the measure of good politics.
Well, I actually don't think gridlock is a bad thing.
Well, I know. And if you get out into the far west, everybody cheers.
Yeah.
when you have gridlock?
Well, the things that I worry about right now, besides what are we going to do in Iraq, and we might come back to that in a little bit, but some of the things I worry about right now is the fact that I think most politicians in Washington really don't understand how the economy works. They don't, and they certainly they don't even understand how the 20th century economy worked, let alone the new economy, the 21st century. Because Mr. Kiplinger, I'm hearing more and more of them, Republicans and Democrats, talking protectionism, and you and I both know that we've already seen what that does, and it's not pretty.
Well, that's right, and there's another, I think, favorable side to world competition or competition in general, and that is that the most of the income and most of the generated economic activity that comes from corporations, even if they're foreign corporations,
yep,
stays at home.
Right.
You know, you've got a big Japanese automobile plant in Marysville, Ohio, up
right,
northwest of Columbus. All those jobs are American jobs.
That's right.
A large part of the management is American. The advertising is American. The promotion, the transportation,
right,
the steel, the aluminum.
The sales, so, all that.
You know, a little shaving of it goes back to Japan, but the same thing is true of our corporations over there.
That's right.
Our corporations in China are making jobs for the Chinese. So I think it's artificial to try to draw these sharp barriers. Like, markets are markets. And, you know, it was commerce that opened up the world.
That's right.
In the original instance, back in the Mediterranean and back long ago.
When the Phoenicians started trading with the Egyptians.
Yeah. The traders got there first, and then the politicians came in and claimed credit for it.
Well, what worries me, Mr. Kiplinger, is this: is that you've got these people like Schumer and Senator Schumer and Senator Graham from North Carolina, a Republican and a Democrat, talking protectionism, and I keep coming back to something that I don't hear a lot of people talk about, Mr. Kiplinger, and I'd like your thoughts on it real quickly. Frederick Bastiat, 160 years ago, from France, said, "When goods cross borders, armies don't."
That's correct. He's right. I'll tell you something about the protectionist fervor. A lot of that is union origin.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
It used to be business source, but I think more of it today is union originated. And I frankly don't think it's going to get very far, because most people are aware of both the pros and the cons of open markets.
Well, we've got to make sure that the Congress doesn't start setting protectionist guidelines and tariffs. We need to be going the other way. We need to be dropping barriers, not putting up barriers. Stand by, Mr. Kiplinger. Folks, we'll be right back with Mr. Austin Kiplinger. It's 10 Till. I'm Jim Blaxengame. Stay with me.
Got you on my mind.
Welcome back. It's 7 Till. I'm Jim Blaxengame, the Small Business Advocate, celebrating our 9th anniversary of being on the air with the Small Business Advocate Show. And only about, I'm going to say about 8 or 9 months after we were on the air, Mr. Austin Kiplinger joined us, and he's joined us almost at least once a year or so ever since then to give us his perspective on the world and what we should be doing. And I can't think of anybody I'd rather hear these things from. And by the way, I want to remind you folks, Mr. Kiplinger's website is Kiplinger.com. It's a great website, and all of the publications that they have is very important. And Mr. Kiplinger, you still go to work every day, don't you?
I do, Jim, and I'm just staying at home to talk to you.
Mr. Kiplinger, I'm really worried. I said I was really worried about protectionism. I'm worried about the fact that too many politicians, Republican and Democrat, don't understand the 21st century, which is a global marketplace. Our intellectual ability has given us the power to export quickly almost everything And to move goods, services, and labor all around, and currency all around the world almost at the speed of light. And we don't need to be fighting that. We should be cultivating that and trading with each other, shouldn't we?
Oh, we certainly should, and that's been the history of the world. We've gone through periods where we've kind of closed our borders and tried to hold things in, but as we were saying, the transfer of civilization over the years has been by trade. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the old Mediterranean basin, that it tells you all those big societies that became so famous as governments like Rome and Greece, they started as trading posts. And that's the way the world works. And trade is the first, is the forerunner of civilization, and then politics comes later.
I've been saying for a long time that capitalism will be rampant in China long before democracy is. What do you think?
Well, I tell you, the Chinese businessman has always been a capitalist. I don't necessarily like the word capitalism because it emphasizes capital instead of people. But I just think it's exchange, trade, everything that's worth anything has to be worth something in return, and that's trade. Mm-hmm. And everything we do is done for somebody else. We do it for somebody else, and then they do something for us. That's the way the world works. So I agree with you.
Will Europe and the U.S. ever get realigned, and will we ever start liking each other again? A lot of people blame George Bush for that. I don't blame George Bush. I think it's much bigger than any one person.
Well, you may remember after World War II in the 50s, there was a phrase called the ugly American.
Right.
And what that meant was that the United States was penetrating many other areas of the world. And I don't regard it as an economic thing so much as it is a cultural thing. Our manner is different. It's more brusque. It's more outgoing. And in many societies that are much more closed, much more inward-looking, that have lived among themselves for centuries, this was not just a breath of fresh air. This was kind of a jolt. Mm-hmm. Well, the ugly American became the beautiful American. Now they like to talk about it in reverse, but I think that look, specific things like Iraq or like Vietnam pricked this thing, and it's not going to last. I think the Europeans like us individually. They just don't like our government.
Yeah. I don't like some of their governments either.
Well, that's right. So it's symbolism. But when you get underneath the surface, I think the animosity is far less than we believe.
Mm-hmm. I think I understand Tony Blair said lately to England, to the English. He said only two people have ever died for you. Jesus Christ and the American GI.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was a pretty strong statement for him to make.
Well, you know, a lot of times, too, governments have to posture in order to, it's kind of a bluffing game.
Mm-hmm.
And as a reporter, I've looked through that for years, and I don't necessarily take what national leaders say as being gospel. They have to say that in order to maintain a position before they go into a negotiation. You've seen negotiators. They all come in with waving their fists, and then they come out agreeing with something.
Right.
And I believe that the world is in that kind of situation right now, and once they get down to business, they're going to compromise and make the necessary decisions.
I hope they'll get on with that. Mr. Kiplinger, time goes by too fast, and we have to end too soon. Thank you for being here. Thank you for being a witness to a century and for taking the time to share some of your wisdom with us.
Thank you, and congratulations on your anniversary.
Thank you very much. Mr. Austin Kiplinger, ladies and gentlemen, a national treasure, Mr. Austin Kiplinger. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, and as you know, this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.